And you are listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Kauai Soapbox with Marshall and Felicia. Marshall, do we have you there? Oops. No.
Hey, Felicia. Aloha.
Aloha. And then I also have my friend Ann Walton in here. Ann, let me see if you're potted up.
Aloha, Felicia.
Yeah, she's there. So we are going to be talking about so many different things, and but all of it sort of falls under this umbrella about how do we keep Kauai a place where people can live, a place where people can feel at home, and that we can stay on this island. And so there are always different opportunities for us to be involved in helping that reality and how we participate in the public process. And so we'll spend the next couple hours talking about a whole lot of points on that. And we're really happy that you're with us. And Kauai Soapbox is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with Kauai Store and Pono Pies.
The views and opinions expressed during this program are those of the speaker and do not necessarily reflect those of KKCR, its management, staff, board, members, volunteers, or underwriters.
The Kauai Store is located in Kapa'a on the highway in front of Kostilas. The store has authentic Kauai products including clothing, snacks, art, coffee, crafts, and more. We even have local food samples. The Kauai Store products are also available online at thekauaistore.com.
Pono Pie, dedicated to restoring breadfruit as a major food crop in Hawaii. Gluten, dairy, and GMO-free. Delicious Pono Pies, available at health food stores throughout Hawaii. PonoPies.com, 808-283-3718.
Ke ala nu'ukia KKCR. KKCR's mission statement. O KKCR ka hui leki o ku o ko'a no Kauai. He hui leki o kaiaulu e pai pai ia ai e ka lehu lehu a e ho'olele ana me ka ho'olaha ole. KKCR is Kauai's independent radio station. A community radio station supported by the people and broadcasting without commercials. Nā pahuhopua KKCR. The goals of KKCR. E ho'olu I ka hoi, e a o'aku, a e ho'ohau oli ho'i I nā hoa ho'olohe. To encourage, to teach, and to also cause enjoyment in the listeners. E mālama, e ho'omau, a e ho'olau le apu I nā mea a me kanohona Hawaii. To care for, to perpetuate, and to celebrate Hawaiian customs and lifestyle. Ho ike I ka nani a kea o ko ka ko kaiaulu a me ke kaiaulu ku waho. Showcase the broad beauty of our community and the outside community. He kahua o KKCR no na leo a me na mele laha loa pu no me ka laha ole. O ke ke kahu foundation ka mea e ho o holo ai ia mau papahana leki o. KKCR is a platform for voices and songs both well known and underrepresented. The Ke Kahu Foundation facilitates these radio programs.
And mahalo for listening to and supporting Kauai Community Radio. And I really enjoyed and found it important to put our mission statement in, because on Kauai Soapbox, we typically are addressing some of the more challenging topics. And I like to really emphasize that that is one of the reasons that we exist. When we have listener-supported radio, that isn't even government-supported radio. It's different than public radio. People have given money to be able to have these free, flowing community conversations that are not influenced by who might be paying to keep the station open. The underwriters that we have, even though we welcome any underwriters, mostly these are pretty small mom-and-pop type businesses, and it is just a beautiful extension of their help to the community. So a couple things to frame some context for our discussion today. And you know, I look at, I'm looking at both Anne and Marshall, and you, the listener who's out there, is that we have so many people on the planet. Our population is really growing.
Yeah, was it 7 billion?
Yeah, I think that's about right. It's about 7 billion, and it is going up. So
2 billion of them are on Facebook.
Is that right?
Yeah, that happened not long ago.
So that's a lot.
Yeah.
So I'm among that 2 billion. We are having this community conversation in social media, too. So when there are so many people on the planet, we're kind of bumping elbows a little bit. There's huge changes that are happening. And sometimes I wonder if government has lost its ability to govern. And when we're looking at our county area, and you might know this, but just in case you don't, or for the listener who might not, like, Hawaii has only been a part of the United States since 1959, and our charter for the county was created in the early 60s, like 61 or 62, and mostly written by one person. And at that time, the sugar companies, the plantations, were still very big and a very strong presence here, and they had camps and areas where they had basically provided housing, medical, a lot of the basic needs of the people. And they had a little store there, and so it was a little cycle that went in there, and they did a lot for the infrastructure, the water, the electric. And, you know, as all these changes have happened, at the time when the county charter was written, it didn't have so much responsibility. And so it was this collaboration, and it was collaboration with government. And a number of those big plantations that were a part of what ran the county, they still seem to have an inordinate amount of power in how the county runs. And it feels like the county government is designed to give them an advantage. And so for people who haven't lived here long enough to really understand how there had been this heavy collaborative pathway in what happened, I mean, that's part of the reason for that. And so in just a little bit, we are going to be looking at how we overlap layers of government, whether it's the federal, the state, or the county. And we're going to look for a pretty good piece about what's happening with the general plan update. And I know that that's kind of a wonky term to use, but it is a very important visioning statement. So we're going to go in pretty deep on that for probably about an hour. But it will lace over to a lot of topics. But something that I want to just play for a moment is to honor our Senator Mazie Hirono. Last week, we were talking about the Affordable Care Act and the effort that's underway to repeal it. That's also known, the nickname is Obamacare.
That effort is over.
That effort is over.
Yeah.
Right. And one of the reasons that that effort went over, I mean, it went over 51 to 49. But there was a few key people. There was two Republican women who voted against the block to take it away. And then there was Senator John McCain from Arizona, and he's actually has brain cancer right now. He ended up giving it the thumbs down. He gets credit for the pivotal vote. But among that other 48 Democrats, our Senator Mazie Hirono, I want to play her statement that she made. I just think it is really an important and beautiful statement. And you know, the pundits tell me, I don't know, John, but like, is that it really actually made a big difference with John McCain in choosing to stand with people who have pre-existing conditions, who are suffering like he is suffering when he has brain cancer, given that the senators and the government has this like really cush, great healthcare program, it's harder for them to actually connect with what it's like to not have that. And so I want to play Mazie.
Hi.
Mr. President, so many of us have spoken so many times now against the repeal of the Affordable Care Act, which would hurt millions and millions of people in our country and especially the sickest, poorest, and oldest among us. I would say that I am probably the only senator here who was not born in a hospital. I was born at home in rural Japan. I lost a sister to pneumonia when she was only 2 years old in Japan. She died at home. Not in a hospital where maybe her life could have been saved. It's hard for me to talk about this. I think you can tell. Give me a moment. When I came to this country as an immigrant, my mother brought me and my brothers to this country so we could have a chance at a better life. And we came here with nothing. She had no paying jobs. There was no health coverage. Growing up as a young girl in Hawaii, my greatest fear was that my mother would get sick. And if she got sick, how were we going to pay for her care? How would she go to work? And if she didn't go to work, there would be no pay. There would be no money. I know what it's like to run out of money at the end of the month. That was my life as an immigrant here. And now, here I am, a United States Senator. I am fighting kidney cancer. And I'm just so grateful that I had health insurance so that I could concentrate on the care that I needed rather than how the heck I was going to afford the care that was going to probably save my life. And guess what? When I was diagnosed with kidney cancer and facing my first surgery, I heard from so many of my colleagues, including so many of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle, who wrote me wonderful notes sharing with me their own experience with major illness in their families or with their loved ones. You showed me your care. You showed me your compassion. Where is that tonight? So I can't believe that a single senator in this body has not faced an illness or whose family member or loved one has not faced illness where they were so grateful that they had health care. I cannot believe that there is a single senator who has not experienced that in their family or their lives. So I know how important health care is. What I don't get is why every single senator does not know that. Why are we here tonight voting on a bill that has not had a single hearing? Why are we here tonight voting on a bill that would eliminate health care coverage that could save lives for 16 million people? Why are we here voting on a bill that will probably mean that people like me, millions in this country who are now in the ranks of those with pre-existing care, with pre-existing conditions, will not get the health care we need? Why are we here tonight? Where is your compassion? Where is the care that you showed me when I was diagnosed with my illness? I find it hard to believe that we can sit here and vote on a bill that is going to hurt millions and millions of people in our country. We are better than that. I listened to John McConnell calling on us to have hearings, to do the right thing. And I'm just saddened that he was not able to move us in that direction. I would call on him tonight to vote his conscience, to vote with us, who say we are going to stand for the millions of people in our country who will be hurt by what we're contemplating tonight. Mr. President, I will yield the floor by asking my friends to show the compassion to everybody in this country that you showed me. We all should be voting to send this bill to committee so we can debate it. I yield the floor.
Wow. I hope that she recovers fully. You know, I was really, really saddened to hear that she had this. And, you know, our representative, Mark Takai, he got some really aggressive cancer. He was pretty young, and during about two years ago, during our convention, our Democratic convention over in Oahu, you know, he had a letter read for him, but he passed away shortly thereafter. Sometimes it comes on really fast, and I'm sorry to be hearing that, that this is something that she's dealing with, and so I want to lift her up in love and best wishes, and I really appreciate her leaving Hawaii while she was in the middle of early care in the discovery of this. She flew all the way back to Washington, D.C. because she knew how important her vote was.
And she said John McConnell.
I know, I got that. She meant John McCain.
Right, so she personally called on John McCain to vote against this, and John McCain did just that.
That's correct.
Yeah, fantastic.
Yeah, and he had just had surgery right above his eye for brain work. So, Anne.
Yes.
You have worked in government, correct? I know you from working for the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
I spent 20 years in federal government, yes. That's correct.
And was it pretty much always in that particular organization?
It was always. I worked in the on the ocean side, so I worked for National Ocean Service, National Marine Sanctuary Program.
Okay, and you ran the Kauai program?
No, I didn't. Jean Souza runs the Kauai program.
Okay, you worked with her then?
I worked with Jean, but primarily the last 12 years I worked internationally. So I trained natural resource managers on how to develop plans, everything from general plans. These are natural resource management plans to climate change adaptation plans to marine spatial plans. So my background is in planning and policy.
Which is similar to writing a big document like the general plan. Like you help write up those big fat documents for NOAA. Is that correct?
I help with the public process and I help guide that process to prioritize what goes in those documents.
Okay.
I don't actually write them.
Okay.
Yes.
But so you are intimately aware of how they work together and what it means to have stipulations or measurable results.
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
That's the whole thing you're trying to get to is results.
Is results. And so
right, exactly.
I have really met you in this process. I think we talked one time before on a plan for the – I went and met you in the office for a different issue, but – I really have gotten to know you in this time period when we've had the general plan update. And I want to thank you for your skill set in being able to help raise some guidance. You know, you really have a lot of very quality assessments of what's happening with that. So I want to just invite you a little bit to take some of the lead in this discussion.
Okay.
I asked you to come in. I appreciate that you did come in. It's just too important to not have a secondary voice in here. And, you know, you can either start wherever you want, or if you don't, then I'm going to throw you to the visitor numbers because that's a big deal.
Well, I'm happy to talk about that, but I just want to say that, you know, to give a little bit of background, a general plan, most people go, no way, no how. Do I have any interest in that? It doesn't do anything. And that's very 1970s thinking, and that's how general plans were done, particularly at the county level back in the 1970s, where it was just a general policy document. It sort of set out the direction that we're going in general, and you would put it on the shelf and hope for the best that would happen over the next 5, 10, or 15 years, depending on the life of the plan. However, since that time, and getting back to how you opened the conversation today with your radio show about change,
mm-hmm.
things are different now. And the pace of change is different in every aspect of life on this planet. For human beings in the natural environment, in the social environment, in the cultural environment, we're seeing unprecedented change. And so we can't afford to develop a plan that's a general plan that speaks in generalities and then is put on the shelf. That time has passed, and a lot of communities and counties and states get that already, and countries around the world, that we need to have plans that are effective, that are accountable, that have a clear direction, that are implementable, that have action items that have results associated with them. And if we don't move in that direction, change will happen without us and without our input and without a future that we want.
Who's us? The people? The citizen?
The people, the communities, the people, and the people of this island. And that's why it's important for us to pay attention that we don't have a general plan like we have had in the past. And in actuality, the existing plan that we're working under right now, which is from 2000, was a really well-crafted plan with a huge amount of public input.
Yeah.
However, it was not ever fully implemented because there was no implementation plan or accountability behind that plan.
And having been a part of that plan, and I spent months and months, like probably a couple years actually, participating in that, and we didn't have a contractor on that one to help organize it. One of the things that happened is that it basically got finished, and then it didn't get put on the agenda for the county council for years, actually.
Yeah.
5 years, I think it was. And so right now we are in that little window between when it goes from the planning department and when it goes to the county council. And I want to both honor and appreciate the people who put a whole lot of work into it. Thank you so much for that work. And I just always am really impressed with our young planners. I emphasize that young part because they're in the early part of their career. They're applying what they've learned in college, and they're doing a good job. And it seems to me, especially watching the process that has gone before the Planning Commission, that the thumb is on the scale for those big landowners to still basically be co-leaders in how our island runs. And so it seems to be, really have a strong pull towards how big business wants Kauai to happen. That's my own interpretation. Does that resonate with you at all? Or did you see something different?
No, I think that's exactly what I saw. And I saw sort of a juxtaposition. Many members of the community who were very interested in helping to guide the direction of this plan and start to address growth on this island. That was there, and that was apparent through the planning department's meetings, through the community advisory committee's meetings that were assembled by the mayor, the advisory committee was, and they had a series of meetings for over a year, and then it went to the Planning Commission. A draft plan went to the Planning Commission. There was a lot of public engagement, community engagement in that process. Having said that, at the same time, what came out of that process as far as the Planning Commission is concerned is that there were decisions made which were not based on the input that happened in those
meetings.
Chambers of the commission. And therefore, where did those large landowner decisions take place? That they must have surely been in the back room of the planning department. And it points to one thing, going back to this theme of change, that some things haven't changed. In other words, the whole sort of plantation mentality around the county, our government, and big landowners being in bed together is still the same as far as we can tell. If you look at the results of the plan, that hasn't changed. So I just want to say a couple things before I forget, and that is one thing that if the community doesn't stay engaged in this process, that's where we're going to end up with what we have right now, which is basically a plan that speaks to both tourism and large landowners and developers, and that it's never too late. And I come from I represent a larger group of people called the Community Coalition of Kauai. We just changed our name. And we have been meeting on a regular basis for the last year and a half. We started by bringing the neighborhood associations together, thinking that they could have a louder voice if they spoke as one voice, because we weren't being heard as individuals at commission meetings, at planning department meetings. And then it sort of expanded there. So the Community Coalition of Kauai is really a broader group now. It's not just representing the neighborhood associations. We're having our next meeting tomorrow, August 2nd, which is Wednesday, at Kapa'a Library at 6:30, from 6:30 to 9. So I say it's important to still get engaged at this point. Many people have said as the plan moves through the system that it becomes less scrutinized. So, in other words, the planning department creates the plan, they develop the draft plan, it goes to the commission. They listen a little bit, but they then stamp the plan and it goes on to the council. And everyone says, well, the council doesn't have time to review a plan that's 357 pages. They'll take the recommendations of the planning commission and the planning department. That has not been my experience. We've been interacting with council members, and the news that I've been getting lately is that they really want to stop, listen. They see the importance of a plan as they've never seen it before. They realize this has to serve us till 2035, and they want to get this right. Now, whether that's going to result in a vote that strengthens the plan or not, I can't speak to that. They haven't even heard it yet for the first time, the council. But they are alluding to the fact that they do want to listen to the community and appreciate the fact that we feel like we've not been listened to.
And I would say that, like, looking at last time, it took 5 years for it to actually end up being on the agenda. There had to be a change of council members, enough change of council members before it was going to be even given that time there. There's value in having a good visioning document, so we're not saying that we want it to just be deferred forever. It's that we really need to have an honest conversation with it. That's the thing I think Absolutely. That happened for me, is that I've gone for almost 3 years to these meetings, and what I have watched, without wanting to torture anybody about it, you know, like I feel like people have tried, but it has moved away from public opinion more than towards public opinion in this window of time that it's been before the Planning Commission. And while as individuals, I can love all these people who used to be the planning directors or worked within the planning department, I cannot help but notice that all they have to do is stand there in the back of the room. And it doesn't matter if we have people up there crying, telling their stories, telling whatever is important to them. The ratio of people with the compelling stories and then to not have it. And even just like what I played there with Maisie Hirano, I don't know how you can listen to that and not feel the depth of what she's sharing. And over these couple few years of listening, I feel like I have heard things with that much depth. And when we see in the Senate, we still had 49 people who were willing to vote in a way that they know will end up in deaths of people when you can't have help with a pre-existing conditions. If you have already cancer or something like that, you're out of luck. So, you know, that's what I felt like I watched. And I would come back with sadness to see that we both weren't really told why decisions were made. We just saw whole areas get eliminated from the plan when it had been kind of written up well, saying there's this tension between how much is enough of visitors or something like that. And then they just take that question out instead of answering it.
Right.
And it hadn't been an even amount. You are listening to KKCR, Hanalei, KAQA, Kilauea. This is Kauai Soapbox with Felicia and Marshall and Ann Walton from the Community Coalition of Kauai. We're in here right now. We're discussing the general plan.
Was planning for climate change something that got taken out, or is there something in the general plan at this point on that?
Well, there is a small section in the plan that doesn't take us nearly far enough. And again, as with much of the plan, if you look at some of the data that are used to inform how that plan was developed, for instance, erosion data, which is pretty important when you're looking at sea level rise, the data that I saw were fairly old data. And I'm sure everyone's been aware that we've been having king tides, which we always have anyway, but they've been exceptionally high king tides and giving us some indication of what's to come when we look at sea level rise. We have to pay attention. We really have to pay attention to change and bring the latest information that we have, even if it's anecdotal, into our understanding of that change and how we're going to respond to it. So again, the plan doesn't go nearly far enough. Now,
Right. And one thing with KKCR here, we do have different projects that we support. So I want to acknowledge an event that's coming up. This is the Mango Fest at Waipaw.
Waipaw Foundation presents the third annual Waipaw Music and Mango Festival, Sunday, August 13th, from 11 to 5 p.m. at Halulu Fish Pond, located a half mile past Hanalei Town. A fun and relaxing day of live music, hands-on activities, food demos, local artisans and crafts, mango contests, a water slide, and many keiki activities. The Waipaw Music and Mango Festival is a fundraiser for the Waipaw Foundation, a special opportunity to enjoy beautiful mele and ono food in the Ahupua'a. More information, waipawfoundation.org or 826-9969.
And that is always a really beautiful event down there. And you get, we're talking about climate change. We see the beautiful Loka'ia right there, the fish pond, the sea right there. And, like, what would it be like if we had sea level rise in Hanalei or Kekaha or Kapa'a or Kealia? There's a number of places where it's pretty vulnerable, Poipu.
Yeah, you know what I've been looking at is the National Climate Assessment that was done in 2014. And if you want to actually look at science and check it out and not get distracted, it's pretty clear, you know, that they don't know exactly what's going to happen, but they can see what's happening, and they've got some pretty good models on what's going down. And this is great. Breaks it up into regions and everything, and lists like the major impacts and potential mitigation, you know, steps that can be taken. And it's hard to imagine developing a plan for the future that doesn't take into account these changes.
Yeah, it's like an elephant in the room. We're going to have several elephants in the room today, but that is one of them. Can you tell us the website name, and could you please put it on my Facebook and KKCR's Facebook page when you're done?
Yeah, the website is NCA, that's National Climate Assessment, NCA2014.globalchange.gov. And
okay.
I'll post that, yeah.
Yeah, that's important. And you've probably had a lot of focus on environmental change in your career.
Yeah, that's where my background is. But I also want to say that the state was putting together an adaptation plan also for the count for each of the counties around the state. But it was an assessment actually, but not actually a plan that moved into a plan. But the council earlier this week or last week, I'm trying to remember where we are, also heard a proposal for an expenditure of $500,000 on an adaptation plan. So I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to what happened with that.
I had gone to that state presentation, and I thought they did a good job, but they let it be clearly known where it was incomplete, and certainly the economic element of it was understated. You know, you could see what they valued would be the loss or the damage, and they didn't look at too many converging factors together, right? They looked at one or the other, but maybe not what happens when the tide's high and you have a flood and it's raining hard, you know. So there were pieces like that. But when we go back to the general plan, okay, pretty light on climate change. What other weak points do you see there?
Well, I'm going to start from the beginning and look at the big picture stuff in the plan.
Okay, please.
The plan is focused around growth, and it declares that up front. And that's what it's framed around, as a general plan should be for a county. But it doesn't give us a clear direction where we want to go in terms of growth. It just declares that it's an issue. And part of what good planning is to have a clear idea of where you want to go and how you want to treat growth. Is this going to be a green growth plan? Is this going to be a managed growth plan? Is this going to be a sustainable growth plan? What does that mean? And once you define it, then how does your policy align with that? And then your goals, and then, of course, all your actions. We don't have that clear direction in the plan. So that's a weakness in the framework of the plan. And therefore, everything in the plan doesn't point to a clear direction and a clear resolution because we don't know where it is we're trying to go.
And when I look at that, I you know, numbers don't really reflect reality. If you say we have 70,000 people now and in 10 years we'll have 70,000 people, that could say that's no growth. But what if it's replacement? Because that's what I've watched is that even if you just look at the hair color of the kids across the island, you see that the population is being replaced. And I love everybody of all the hair colors, but the point is that what kind of growth do we have? And some ways that I frame it, I say this is a game of musical chairs here. It's an economic game of musical chairs, and people have to take jobs that actually are exploitative in nature and are maybe pushing other people off. It seems that, like, in my view, the visitor industry is understated in this plan, and we are seeing so much growth in it that's not fair to the visitors or the people. And so what I see that is like chumming the water for the land development company. So as we invite millions of people to come, or at least a million people here on our tiny little island, then right behind it is the people trying to lure them in to making land purchases and home purchases, and that's another big factor of our economy. But then they buy it, and they're not even really welcome, you know, or they can discover that pretty soon, that people were very resentful for it, many of whom are non-resident owners. So we're selling off the housing that we have to people who aren't here, who pay the highest layer of taxes. So it sort of funds the government, but we are effectively pushing our own population out and into houselessness till they're driven off the island.
Yeah, so I think there's many factors that are contributing to that, but I think if we want our general plan to work for us and to address some of the issues, the first thing is we have to look at the data, and we have to use real data.
So is there data for population replacement? Because I don't see that in there. I see numbers, but I don't see that it says we have the same numbers, but we're pushing the people, the generational group out. Is that in there?
No, it doesn't break it down like that.
Yeah, I didn't think it did. So to me, that's the part that's not an honest conversation.
But also part of this that's not an honest conversation is where you started when you started talking about the data, and that's visitor numbers. And if you read the paper on Sunday, TGI Forum, you'll see that it says the article in the paper, which is the op-ed, says, take pride in those million visitors, that in June 2017, visitor count totaled 124,130 visitors, an 8% increase over June 2016.
8%.
8%. So
wow.
In the first half of 2017, so we're right through half of the calendar year, we've already had 626,409 visitors. That's a 7.5% increase over the same time last year.
How much percent over last year?
7.5%.
Wow.
So this is what the plan says. DBET, which is the Department of Business, Economic Development, and Tourism, actually says that from 2010 to 2015, the latest time period for which they made projections, that there was a 4.6% per year increase between 2010 to 2015. And the plan, up until a couple of versions ago, there's been 7 iterations of this general plan that went before the Planning Commission. The general plan kept saying that there was 0.4%.
Right. Magnitude of scale off.
Projecting forward between 2015 and 2035. Well, already this year, in the first half of this year, we're up 7.5% over last year. So that's a big part of our population issues here, is the contribution from visitor numbers. And that's affecting housing. That's affecting traffic and transportation. That's affecting a lot of the, and I'm not saying it that alone, but if you look at those numbers, you know, if we continue this trend, we'll have 2.25 million visitors this year in 2017.
And just trying to process that for a moment,
mm-hmm.
If you've got 135 visitors in a month and we have 70,000 people, that means, I mean, not at any one time because they're not all here for a month, but, you know, it's probably at a minimum 1-to-1 of the people on the streets. It certainly seems like in a place like Hanalei, it's 2 or 3 to 1 of people who are on vacation. We have a caller. Let's take a quick question, and but we're going to stay right on track where you're at right there. Aloha, you're on the air.
Aloha, Felicia.
Hi.
Hi. Well, the problem with on Kauai is not just the tourist industry. The problem is the people that come and don't move, that barks the local family and people off of their own home and turf. You know, with the illegal selling of lands and developments on lands that's not even theirs to begin with to develop. The planning commission, they all know this, that from the get-go, the day one, the whole thing purpose is to get the original people off of their own home turf like they did to the Native Americans and et cetera. So the ones that's been moved off the island is the real people of this habitat. And they're being replaced by people that just come here and just buy money from quick claims and quiet titles, which are illegal, until they start finding out that the people that really owns the land, when they come up for their land and money, they got to go through a whole court issue of land title and et cetera. You know what I mean? So the commission awards, they know what they're doing, but they got a big gap where they can't move forward because of people that's holding rodeo titles and land issues that, and owns the land. You know what I mean?
I do. And when I said a little bit earlier in the show that there's a couple elephants in the room and we're going to go deeper on the point that you're talking about later in the show.
I love it.
Is that
a lot of people in Hawaii that has the rodeo title, a lot of us listen in to this radio show to see how really smart people is in office and to see how much that they shouldn't be in office.
And just I'm saying this for the listener that might be less aware of what you're speaking about. When I say there's an elephant in the room, what I noticed in the plan is it calls it something like, what is it, resources? It's like, what's the Hawaiian element in the plan? It's almost condescending.
There's a heritage.
Heritage resources. Yeah. I mean, I just get a stomachache when I hear heritage resources because, you know, the elephant in the room is that we are seeing very clearly that how Hawaii became a state in the United States was not legal. We had President Clinton really do the apology bill, and then nothing followed up on it. But there's more and more people that are awakening and raising, and they know.
Well, when Ronald Reagan was in office, he hired 6 of the world's greatest attorneys to buy so many millions of acres of Hawaii. 6 of those attorneys came back to Ronald Reagan at the time saying they cannot. So Reagan finally asked them, why can't we? Because the 6 of them said, we don't own it. So basically, there's a lot of proof and compliance on the behalf of one, and there's another behalf on the other side that don't have any great proof on it. You know what I mean? So basically, you guys are on a good track. Thank you so much, Felicia, for your time. You know, you're doing a great job, and your questioning is very awesome. I like the questions you ask people, and I think it's very direct and straightforward. And a lot of times I can hear it in certain people's voices that they cannot answer your questions because maybe it's too much of their boundary. They might lose their job or something in a position, but you're doing a great job, Felicia. Great job. Aloha.
Aloha. Thank you. So following up on what he said for just a moment before we go back to what you're speaking there, like what I have seen and what, like why I play the mission statement for KKCR is that it is just like the biggest tidal surge is this awakening and awareness and loving positive energy of reclaiming the cultural piece of what's here and the right to the land. And so when I see a value system difference, the value system in the dominant culture is exploitative in nature. It's so centered around economics, and you can make the most money if you exploit something, whereas the value system of our culture here, the Hawaiian culture, is malama aina or aloha aina, meaning love and care for the land. That has the utmost peace because this is an isolated piece of land. So even if we don't take the hard look at which government deserves to be here or is here, like whether it deserves to be here or not, even if we don't take that hard look, it's like what makes Hawaii special, what makes Hawaii resilient, sustainable, all those words. Certainly the empowerment of our host culture is not only wise to be given support and reflection, but it is demanding it, and demanding it in a meaningful way. And I felt when I read the general plan, it gave some nice platitudes to it, but for the most part, it really ignored it. And I attend and film a lot of political discussions with our elected policymakers, and that is so often left out of the conversation. And it is as foolish to leave that out of the conversation as it is to leave out climate change or the environmental changes that are happening, whether people believe that they're man-made or not. They are happening nonetheless. And later in the show, I'm going to bring up a little piece about the U.S. War College, what they came up with, and talking about their post-primacy America. So if the Army is putting out a report that's calling post-primacy, I don't mean to be we'll take this time up a little bit later, but where I'm wanting to just point out with what the person just called and said is the Army, when they're looking at, or what are the threats to the primacy of the United States, and the primacy of the United States means the United States being able to do whatever they want, wherever they want. A big part of the problem was internal. A big part of the problem was not controlling the dialogue anymore, and basically, without even looking at ethnic groups, there's a big group of people who are standing up and saying, this isn't the game that we want to play, and we're not willing to do it. And as we see, particularly younger people keep awakening, they are going to change the conversation. And I did not feel that this plan even came close to addressing that. So anyway, back to what you were sharing.
Well, I want to say that you know, this is not for me to speak to, but the Malama Aina context of the plan was actually stripped quite a bit out of the plan.
Oh, yes.
And it started off in the beginning to have a much more of a Hawaiian cultural context, and that was denuded as the plan moved through the seven iterations of the plan. And really, the heritage resources is more about places and things, like buildings and structures and cultural sites, which are important, but they have to fit within a larger cultural context, which is missing from the plan.
Yeah, it seemed to me like we were supporting our heritage sites so that we would keep our tourism industry vibrant and relevant. Like the branding of Hawaii needs to stay Hawaii. But what I'm seeing from the young emerging generation, and also people of, I'm not old, but I'm old enough to be a lot of their mothers and their grandmothers, I am seeing an authentic practice of the culture. It is not a dinner show entertainment. It is not a performance at school to show that they've learned something. It is real, and it's moving forward, and when people aren't paying attention to that, it is in complete ignorance. We have another caller holding, right? So we'll take a quick call, and but I like that we have input from our community. Yes, you're on the air. Do you have a question or thought?
Yeah, hi. Hi, my daughter was just doing a research project regarding single-use plastics and styrofoam to-go containers. And in a really short amount of time, a little bit of research that we did together, she discovered that of the visitors who come to the island, 80,000 of them per month, if each of them uses just 4 single-use containers, which is a super low figure, a really, really low figure, that would be over 30 million pieces a year going into our landfill just from the visitors only, not including any plate lunches that anybody who lived here would buy or bottled water that we often buy on the fly. 30 million a year. So I would love to hear what is in the general plan about the landfill and how are they addressing not just dealing with the rubbish, but preventing the rubbish. How are they addressing getting better at preventing this consumption of non-biodegradable material?
Thank you, and thank your daughter for her research.
Mm-hmm.
And I would encourage your daughter to come to the county council meeting and speak out about her research. It's so effective when it comes from somebody young and someone who's done really good research on the numbers. The numbers are very impressive, and that's what moves people, and hopefully will move the council.
So that they're pulling up infrastructure relative to visitor numbers, because she said 80,000 a month, but, you know, you looked at 137,000 or 134,000 just for June. It's even bigger than that, you know, and we do have this landfill issue. So continue.
So the county does speak to the fact that it's an issue. There's a section on critical infrastructure, and they do look at solid waste disposal and recycling. And I don't have all of the action items memorized out of the 357-page document, but I would urge you to take a look at it online. Go to plankauai.com, and you'll see the plan there. And it'll probably be really interesting for your daughter to take a look at how the county plans or plans not to address the issue of styrofoam. And you know there's been an effort on this island for quite some time to, as well as statewide, to ban styrofoam. And part of it is that you should demand, we ourselves should demand that whenever we get anything, don't buy anything in styrofoam. Or when you get food from the food trucks, demand that they don't use styrofoam. Go back to cardboard.
And start bringing your own little glass
and
pieces.
Bring your own
because
containers.
We really have to change our own behavior. In some ways, it's like the alcoholic blaming the liquor store when I see how much is used. But, I mean, what I have had people share that work in the visitor industry that do condo cleaning or vacation rental cleaning is that people typically come, they go from the airport straight to Costco. They buy up huge amounts, and they buy the volume bottles, and people are, you know, having to just throw away tons of, say, ketchup and everything else because they can't. They can only have so much in their own homes or share them out, and you can't take them to the places to be reused. And it's just, they say, the garbage is unbelievable in the packaging that is coming out of these vacation rentals.
And, I mean, I think that's something we have to think about in our own lives, too, not just visitors, that everything that you put in the trash and every time you replace a refrigerator, throw away a piece of clothing or, you know, a piece of packaging in some way, where is that going? And we have to really think about that in our own lives as well. So we have to be the example.
When we hear reduce, reuse, recycle, I'm really big on the reduce. Just don't buy it in the first place.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But that is an issue. We're running out of landfill space, and any time you live on an island, especially out in the middle of the Pacific, we're a very defined ecosystem surrounded by water, and at some point we're going to run out of places to put our landfills. And that's what we have to think about then, you know, as Felicia says, not to consume it to begin with.
Yeah, and when we have been looking at the planned place to put the new landfill, which is in the Ma'alo area there. I can't help but notice that some of that land is state land, some of it's Grove farmland, I believe, and then some is Department of Hawaiian Homelands, and it's a wetland, and it is, you know, in a dangerously or prohibited zone close to the airport. So it's not easy finding a new place to do it. So we have to shift our behavior.
We have to make a paradigm shift here. And not always looking for another way to handle our issues as we have in the past.
By throwing it away.
You can't throw it away. You know, everything. When you replace your car, where's that big piece of metal going then? You know, it has to fit somewhere on this island. So I think we have to start to think we live with limited space.
It gets sent to California. Actually, it does. I did a show on that, too.
Well,
yeah. But
there's a greenhouse gas emission associated with
shipping it over there. Yeah.
So.
So you said something I think was very important, and that is, like, for this young woman and her mother to make sure that when the county council is looking at it, that they come and that they're ready to present, and they can even present ahead of time. And then also for... You sound like a young man that called in and talking about the alloidial titles. Even though I recognize they don't recognize the occupier government, right. It is still very important that the government that is in place and does get to fine people or arrest people or whatever else, that they are able to hear them too. So it's very important for this young, empowered, or any group of empowered people to come in and be seen and to be heard, or if you are friends with these people ahead of time, or if you were to write to council testimony at, or council members at, kauai.gov, and say what is important to you. I know, like, houselessness is one of the huge ones. We have another caller. Quick, aloha. Can you turn your radio off?
Yes, I just did.
Okay.
Hi, Felicia. This is Joe.
Hi, Joe.
In regard to the garbage, it's ridiculous. You know, I live and work here at Molawa in Organica, and we have some people here, you know.
Right.
And we had a lady come about 3 months ago, and she's just started. I'm one of my jobs is take care of the garbage. And she said, let's do this. Let's see how little garbage we can do, you know. And I thought, oh, yeah, nobody's going to do that. Well, by golly, it made a difference. You know, people, and we go to Circle every morning, and once a week we talk about garbage, you know, for 5 minutes, you know. And it has helped. And young people who come here to the farm to learn farming, you know, at home, mom takes care of those things, and all of a sudden they're doing it. So it's a, but my thing about garbage is, I don't know what's wrong with the state or the county opening it up for people to come in and go through the garbage to see what can be salvaged. Of course, there's a liability problem with that also, and a health problem. And the other thing is, I was stationed in Germany in the 60s. I ran around with an old German guy, and he had been an electrical engineer. When the war ended, the city of Frankfurt had no electricity. They didn't bomb the power plant, but their wires were all down. And they didn't have fuel because the mines were closed, flooded. And for about 4 or 5 years, the city of Frankfurt furnished what electricity they could, all from picking over the ruins. And that was all burnt. I don't know why we can't burn garbage. There's many places in the state, in the mainland, that do that. I know there's a smoke problem, but they also have these wonderful filters now. I mean, I read an article about 10 years ago about Con Edison and the filters they put on the Con Edison power plants near the city of New York, and there were a new type of filter. And it was an immense amount of pure air because of those filters. You know, from the smoke, from the furnaces. That's all I got to say.
Okay, and then
we've got to do something than what we've been doing.
Yeah,
not doing anything.
Thank you. Love you too. In Europe, they're doing quite a bit of rubbish burning. Oahu probably has the capacity
It does it right now.
I think for the amount of garbage that Kauai has, it's not an easy thing. There's some difficult spaces on that. Do you have a quick comment on garbage? Okay. You are listening to KKCR Hanalei KAQA Kilauea, the station that loves you. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Ann Walton from the Community Coalition of Kauai is in here, and we are discussing government policy. We are going to acknowledge that our program is made possible by listeners like you in partnership with the Copper Man and Second Skin. We might have a call, but then I want to let Anne, she's got a good list of things there. I want her to really be able to get it all out before then we take many more calls, because I want to be able to really make sure you get through that. But thank you so much for listening.
KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea, K224CQ Anahola, K284AL Haleiwa.
Aloha, listeners of KKCR. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, your daily grassroots global news hour, urging you to support Kauai Community Radio. KKCR has been broadcasting from their jungle shack and building community in the island since 1997. Please show your love for KKCR by making an investment in the station that loves you. Your support at any level will pay dividends all year long and ensure the continued success of Kauai Community Radio. From our family at Democracy Now! To your ohana in the center of the Pacific, mahalo for your support. It really does make a difference.
The Copper Man. Copper, stainless steel, and galvanized aluminum. We specialize in ornamental and custom work and fabricate and install any kind sheet metal work, residential and commercial. Serving Kauai for over 30 years. We're still talking. HarryConte.com. That's HARRYCONTI.com or 639-3456. PackYourTrash.org and SaveRCs.us.
Second Skin Organics Hawaiian Mosquito Shield. Safe and effective. Protecting you and your ohana since 2001. Kauai grown, GMO free, sustainable organic agriculture based solutions. Uamau ke'ea oka'aina I ka pono. More information on their global mission and vision for Hawaii at secondskinorganics.com.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio.
And Ann, I'm just looking at your website, communitycoalitionkauai.org. Very nice job. Asked right up front there, is this the future you want for Kauai? And I think it would be worth all our while to take a look and see if it is. You've got it really nicely laid out, so it's easy to understand how to read the document or find the information you're looking for and how to have input at this point. And you said you're having a meeting tomorrow night, right?
Right. So tomorrow night at Kapa'a Library, community-wide meeting. The stage that we're in right now is that we're planning for the general plan, the draft general plan's arrival at the county council chambers. And I just got some information about an hour before I came here that the county council, will be hearing the plan for the first time on August 23rd. At the regularly scheduled council meeting. That means that they will then hear a general overview, brief overview on the plan, and they will schedule that plan on their agenda, which will take multiple meetings. So I really urge you, part of what we're doing as the community coalition is trying to reach out to the broadest audience that we can of community members around Kauai to say that you still do have a voice and it's important that you're heard. There is still an opportunity. The council has been very open with us and attended many of our meetings that have been going on for the last year and a half. And what we'll be talking about tomorrow night at 6:30, from 6:30 to 9 at the Kapa'a Library, is our strategy for speaking with a unified voice in front of the county council. I also just want to say another plug while I can, and that is on our website, ckk.org, ckk, community coalition, kauai.org, there's a petition. And if you're not happy with the direction that the plan's going and that you want to see a plan that really speaks to our needs on Kauai, that reflects community interests and input, then please sign the petition. It's very easy. It'll take you less than 30 seconds to do so online.
And you're saying the letter ckk.org, because I'm getting your site at communitycoalitionkauai.org.
You can get it both ways.
Okay.
We tried to make it simple and then use our full name as well.
Okay, I recommend the full spelling. I'm not getting it on KCK.
Oh, okay.
Okay, and then you posted it on my Facebook page and
well.
On KKCR's Facebook page?
Yes.
Okay, and then, all right, I said we're going to hold calls, but we got two people waiting, and so we're going to take them quick for callers that are coming on. Aloha, you're on the air. Oops. Okay, that one's off. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello? You're on the air. Aloha, you're on the air?
I guess they're gone, Felicia. I don't know.
Okay. All right. Well, I mean, we did hold it because I very much care that people want to be able to share their points and really want to get people coming. And when they're asking questions or they're sharing thoughts, it knows that they're engaged.
Yeah, and both of those callers just had a quick comment, so I encourage them to call back. Here's one now.
Okay. Aloha, you're on the air. Hello?
Oh, maybe it's our phone system.
Hi. Hi.
May I ask a question of Ms. Walton?
Yes, you may.
A big part of the general plan has to do with pushing as much development as possible into Lihue, which requires, as I understand it, taking water from the Wailua watershed. And I was wondering whether this was something that would be opposed by the public or any organization. And what effect that would have on the general plan if that delayed water going to Lihue from Wailua. So I'll hang up and listen to your answer, if that's okay.
Yeah, thank you very much for your question. And I think this is not my area of expertise. I wish Sharon Goodwin was here, or if you're listening, Sharon.
I paid a lot of attention to that topic.
Please call in. But I think the whole trust responsibility towards the public and the Hawaiian people in regards to access to water is not adequately dealt with in the plan. But you're right, the redirecting of water for development purposes, particularly in regards to Lehui, is an issue that is it's spoken to, but it's not addressed within the plan.
Yeah, it is actually a very big issue, and a little later in the show we'll talk also about Kauai Island Utility Cooperative, because we have the 65-year lease that's coming up, and is it made sure that there is what's called water reservation rights for particularly the Hawaiian people, but also just the public trust of running downstream. And I did notice that the general plan is really trying to divert as much development as they can to the Lihue area. Aloha, thank you. You're on the air.
Hi, I just got a quick thing to say. I think we should make recycling mandatory, and it shouldn't be like an option of whether you want to do it or not. It should be, you should be penalized if you don't. Because if you look in everybody's trash cans on trash days, probably 80% of that stuff can be recycled. You know, and so if that was mandatory, that would cut down the waste.
Yes, that would. What that would do is that would cut down what ends up in the landfill. I don't know that it would be as much help to the earth as not buying it in the first place, because this stuff is a very deep burden for the county to be holding on to all this cardboard or the cans or the glass, and the glass has gotten much more difficult.
Well, that's the thing, that once we turn into the mandatory recycling phase, then we've got to step on the gas on providing facilities to produce all this stuff and to, you know, to process everything and make where it goes, make it go where it goes, so it can come,
so,
you know, it just doesn't go into the landfill.
That's right. It doesn't go into the landfill, but this is really a strong point for me, is that because I was responsible at one point for when we did the prototype for the plastics,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, it was a bunch of, like, gentrified ladies sitting there trying to clean up all those little plastic bottles so they don't get mold or mildew or have this problem or that problem, and then trying to hawk a boat to put it on, and it gets sent, you know, we store it for a year and then send it to China. I mean, it is better that it doesn't even ever end up on the island.
Yeah, that's the thing too.
It's not environmentally productive. I'm sorry.
You know, the stuff that's coming in needs to be more regulated, that, hey, we can't deal with that, you know, so we shouldn't even bring that stuff here. But I got another quick point too on the water.
Mm-hmm.
I was just thinking, you know, what if I told you that all the developers and stuff, they can have 100% of that water? You can take every single drop, but under one condition. You have to get it from the bottom of the island when the island is done with it, when it's shedding it out to the ocean, and use the technology and everything to pump it and propel it back to where you need it at your development site. But you should not be able to take it ahead of everybody up, you know, higher up, so nobody gets anything, and you disrupt the whole flow of what was here, you know, as long as Kauai's been here. And we're just a little blink, and all of a sudden we're going to come here and change the whole plan of the water flow? You know, it doesn't make sense. Why don't you take it from the bottom? You can have as much as you want.
Use
technology and
there
our
is resources the technology
today to get
do
the
it.
Water back to where you need it.
Yeah, there
and
is.
And everybody's happy.
Thank you. There is actually that technology is getting stronger and stronger to be able to desalinate water and to move it around. So that's a point well taken.
That's where we should go, I think. And then the water, you know, the whole thing about farming and stuff, all the farmers should have first dibs on the water, because that's, you know, they're putting it directly back into the land. But when you're coming in just so people can water their grass and develop a giant neighborhood center or a shopping mall and stuff, you guys should have to get the water down from the bottom and use your money that you're making off your income to bring the water back to you so it can do its natural thing and make it to the sea, or just almost, you know, to where they can grab it, where, but just not at the top. Let everybody that's in the flow of nature, that's farming and all the natural things that are helping the Aina, I think they should get first priority to the water, and not commercial farmers too that are like doing mass production stuff, or commercial scientists actually, like the guys out in the west side. You know, but if, like, people have home farms and, like, just in smaller scale, so it brings it back down to people have rights to the water instead of big businesses and bigger developments.
So thank you.
Have the rights. And if you have something
that crosses
a line of development, like, you know, if you get so big, then you should have to get the water from the bottom and participate in the cost of propelling it back up for these guys that want to use the water for other reasons than people that want to use it just for life.
Thank you so much for sharing
all.
That. Aloha. Okay, and come to the meetings. Thank you. Okay. Do we have another caller waiting?
We don't have another caller. I want to mention that there is a new technology for desalinating water.
Yeah,
it's super exciting. The new synthetic material. Yeah, a gravity operated filter. You can just filter out everything except H2O molecules. It's beautiful.
Yeah, the technology is changing so vibrantly that is. I have that on my list for a little bit later in the show, is like how much change is coming. I want to make sure, Anne, that you're able to get through. You have some good bullet points.
You know, it's hard to distill a 357-page document, but I just want to say, in general, in looking at the document and the reason that we, for the most part, don't think the document is acceptable in its current form, that is the general plan, is just because it's not a really solid plan. It doesn't have a clear direction where it wants to go in terms of growth and how we're going to manage growth. And almost everything we've talked about today comes back to that question of where is it we're going with growth. Even if the technology is here to reprocess plastics, which is a highly polluting process, I have to say.
It is.
Even if there's the technology for enough water, we still have to get really clear about where we want to go with growth on this island and what is within the legal bounds of what can be done in terms of addressing growth. And I don't think the plan gets to that point. It doesn't have a clear direction. It's not showing leadership in any way about leading us towards a future that we all want. So I think that's the big underlying problem with the plan. The other part of the plan, as we spoke of earlier, is that there's not a clear implementation component with the plan.
Meaning it doesn't say how to do it. It says here's a vision, but it doesn't say how we get there or how we know that we're going in the right direction. Is that what that means?
Right. If you don't know what direction you're going in, how do you know if your actions in the plan are going to get you where you want to go? You have to know where's your destination, and then you pick the map according to where your destination is. If you don't know where the destination is, what are you using as a map? Are you using the globe, or are you using nothing, or what are you using for a compass? So that has to provide the clear direction to begin with. And in regards to the implementation, of course, how can you pick? The plan is full of lots and lots of ideas. And as the planning department and even the mayor will tout, this has everybody's ideas. We've collected this from all over the island, ideas about what should be in the plan. But there's no sense of what's going to get us anywhere. There's lots of ideas, but without any clear direction. And what is going to be the return on the investment in actually implementing those plans? Well, it doesn't matter because there's no implementation plan either. There's no accountability for the plan. There's no prioritization. And without that big framework of understanding where are we going into the future, none of those things can align, and they don't exist.
And just to articulate this for people who don't really understand what a general plan is,
right.
This is the foundation of how the regulations and the rules are set. So, like, where certain things can be built or not, it's the county zoning ordinances are affected by this. So
right.
It matters a whole lot. So if people don't pay attention now or voice in, and something that concerns me, and you might be able to correct me, but when I look at this plan, it is centralizing who gets to make the decisions. Like, it seemed like last time there was like a North Shore Development Plan and a South Shore Development Plan, and the regions, they said what they wanted, and then the county picked up on top of that. Am I reading that wrong? Is it still doing that? Or it seemed to me that it is more centralized and that the county gets to say what the regions want.
Yeah, I don't think it's intentionally structured that way, but the process was, the way the process unfolded was that there was a huge amount of public input and very specific community input, particularly in regards to the future zoning. And community spoke out when there was proposed changes in the plan for zoning. Princeville too.
Yeah.
It was asked
passionate
to,
testimony.
Passionate testimony on that. As it was, as their decisions were as if there had been no testimony at all. There was no reaction to that at all. Hokua Place in the Kapa'a area near the middle school, same thing. Much impassioned testimony about that.
On both sides of that issue.
Both sides of that issue, and in the plan up until through the third draft of the plan, the county very clearly said the community has spoken. They looked at the maps. They do not want an upzoning from agricultural land to general neighborhood zoning of that area next to the middle school for that development. And then in version number four, 180-degree turnaround on that. Complete request for upzoning of that agricultural land without any rationale for why that was done, why that change was made. That's an example of some negotiation that took place in the back room. Same with A and B lands, Alexander and Baldwin lands, on the west side. They requested to have a whole new zoning category included in the plan that was unprecedented, called provisional ag.
Yeah, that was a big deal.
Where the heck did that come from?
Right.
And the Planning Commission was ready to accept that, and there was no definition in the plan for provisional ag zone.
Which, to me, that means provisional non-ag. When you call it provisional ag, it means ag unless we decide we want to do something else with it. Is that correct?
That's a loose interpretation, and I would say as a policy and planning person, when something has no definition, it means it's open to anything, wide open. And that was actually interpreted by the planning commissioners during the meeting, and they took a vote on it, what that should mean. So it didn't come to them with any definition. I question whether that's lawful or not, whether you can create a whole new zoning category and definition in the middle of a plan without public notice.
Can we speak to housing for a moment? Because I see housing as the most urgent issue. And so, for many people, one of the most urgent issues, right, because there are so many people who are houseless, mm-hmm, being displaced. Even yesterday, I talked to somebody who is generationally from here and, you know, with a heavy heart is feeling that he might have to leave the island possibly permanently in the next month or two. And he's, you know, approaching 60, and it's very, very difficult. And it is distressing within families, because if there's one house left, who does it go to? Does it go to the grandkids? Does it go to the uncle? Who does it go to?
Right.
Right? And we have such a difficult method of being able to manage these needs. We have a problem with the farm worker housing. There's just across the board we have serious housing issues. And part of that, I feel like, is because we are encouraging so much flock of people from off-island, and we are building for that community to be selling to the people who aren't from here, who don't even live here now.
Right. So just looking at the affordable housing piece, because there's multiple pieces within the housing section. There's also ag worker housing. There's houselessness housing as well. But looking at the affordable housing piece of that, I feel like the Planning Commission felt like they checked that box by supporting the upzoning of the agricultural lands next to Kapa'a Middle School, mm-hmm, where a Hokua Place would be built. And from the studies at this stage, remember, this is just the first stage of upzoning. It still has to go to the Land Use Commission. It still has to go back to the council. They still have to get their permits. At the time, they were talking about affordable housing starting at $470,000.
Right.
Now, I don't know in whose book this is affordable housing. And affordable housing is not a number. It's a formula. It's based on household income, the number of people in the household. It's an equation.
And Marshall, can you look up really quick what most of the housing interest rate is? Because I usually think of when I'm trying to decide what the rent rate or the mortgage rate is, I go about 800 per 100,000. If it's at 6%, it's about 800 per 100,000. So if something is 470,000, that is probably about $3,500 a month if you had to finance that whole piece.
And the reality is, of looking at those kinds of numbers, that, and I can't do the numbers in my head like Felicia can, but these are projections in 2017. If this doesn't get built and is not accommodating people in for 5 to 7 to 8 years, something like that, which is the reality of how long it would take, what then is going to be the cost of housing? So these are very loose projections today. What's going to happen when the reality of when those housing projects are ready to be occupied?
Right, and we could have a sine wave. Do you see what it is?
I just need that question again, Felicia.
What is the typical interest rate on a home mortgage right now? Because when I go $800 per month per $100,000 loaned, that's based on about a 6% interest rate. Because it's your interest rate is what determines how much you pay. And that's why it's so important not to get an adjustable rate mortgage. And that's what happened in 2008.
So we've got, for a 30-year fixed rate, it's 4.625% with APR 5.67%.
APR, average percentage rate. Okay.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I haven't done the real estate thing, really.
Okay. All right. So 4.5. So that's less than that. So maybe we would go like 600 per 100,000. So we're more at like 2,400 if you put 70,000 down. I just try and make it be in actual terms.
Right.
Because people don't really know what that means. And so it's like, can you get it or you can't get it? And so if you say, well, all right, I have to make $2,400 a month mortgage payment if I was able to put $70,000 down, how many hours a week do I have to work to be able to pay that $2,400? And how many? I know a lot of people who don't make $2,400 even a year. So let's hope that even if they made twice that, that it's, you know, half their income. So it's just important to be able to hook that onto it, because a lot of times the people, I'm just speaking to the people who might be listening who have not yet entered the housing market. If you haven't bought a house, you don't understand what that means. And I have even spoken to teachers who teach math, and they think when they're getting a $200,000 loan, that means they have to pay $200,000 back. And they don't realize that by the time they pay it back, they might have paid, you know, $425, $450. They don't really understand how the interest rate plays into it. And that's something that we're not learning in our schools, is financial literacy or civic literacy, for that example. And right now what I'm trying to give in this little crush moment is a little bit of financial literacy and a little bit of civic literacy. We're having the civic literacy about what goes on with the government. So tomorrow night at 6:30 to 9 at the Kapa'a Library, this more robust discussion will be happening, and people will be learning about areas that seem to be of concern from people like yourself and Walton, who's 20 years with the federal government working.
No more.
Okay, retired, but working on those types of documents. So if there's a couple more pieces, that's fine. And then I want to kind of move on to some of the other issues that are out that have to align with this, like between the regulators, the non-government organizations, and the nonprofits, because we are at a watershed moment this year for many new elements. The courts are government, but the courts are a whole nother layer, too.
Right.
Do you feel like you were able to address what you need? Do you have a couple final thoughts?
I just want one final thought, if that's okay. I think that the important thing here to realize is that there are considerations that are Kauai-wide considerations. When you're looking at transportation, traffic issues, that's a Kauai-wide issue. There's no question about it. When we're looking at distribution of affordable housing, that should be a Kauai-wide discussion. But there are a lot of decisions that were made in the plan, that have been made in the plan, that are very community-based decisions. And we urge you at the community level to, through your new neighborhood associations or community organizations, to pay attention to what's in the general plan that's very specific to your own community, and look at that as well, and provide input, because some communities spoke out quite a bit during this process.
I want to give a shout out to Elielli and Hanapepe Neighborhood Association. They were strong.
They were awesome in this process. Wailua Kapa'a have been strong. Hanalei to Haena have been strong. So there have been certain ones, but many of these concerns that we're hearing from you and that have come from the community that's been engaged should also be funneled through your community organizations, neighborhood associations, and or you. Please come speak up. Join our meeting tomorrow night. And also, when the county council starts to hear, it will be multiple meetings, the general plan. We hope that you're there. Your presence will make a difference.
And I want to say that one thing, what I watch with, without naming any particular community association, when there is a community that has a need, like a new road or something like that, then they are more hesitant to give any pushback, because, like, if they don't give something, then they're afraid they won't get what they might need, you know. So fear of retribution is very real, and that's something that I watch happen here. And often I am the kind of person, partly because of this show, but also my demographic, because people will tell me what they're concerned about, what they're afraid of, and they'll say, hey, can you say this? And they'll tell me a very detailed reason of what the problem is with a plan that's being made, with a, you know, a policy. And I'll say, well, why don't you say it? You know, you'll have much more credibility. And they go, no, you know, I don't want to, because they don't want to risk retribution somewhere. And so it's like, who gets stuck in front of the firing squad? You know, it's like, or maybe not the firing squad, but in the hot seat, right? So it really makes a difference. The more people come out, and I will tell you who tends to come out the most are people who weren't born here, because they don't have as deep of an awareness or a fear on that. But I'm telling my friends who weren't born here, I mean, who were born here, who have generational history here, those who have multiple generations here, your voice has so much deeper clout. And to the point where those of us who weren't born here are almost bluntly told that they don't even want to hear what we have to say, or to go against those of us who are newer to the community is almost like a strong point. So if you who have generational history here and you have an issue, make sure you're saying it, you're sharing it, even if you're just going councilmembers@kauai.gov or counciltestimony@kauai.gov. It's very important that that word goes out.
Felicia, we had a caller who asked me to ask a couple of questions.
Okay.
One is whether you see the ADU benefit, the additional dwelling unit, being restored to ag lands. Does that look like it could be a possibility?
I know that they are definitely looking at the additional rental unit, which is like an additional dwelling unit. Mostly they're trying to do infill. One of the reasons why that is more being looked at in concentrated areas is it's cheaper for the county to be able to get services, water, roads, septic, everything into a place where that's already in place and adding capacity, than it is to have it be at the long extreme. So I have not heard about an additional dwelling unit on agricultural properties. There's certainly the pieces that's under discussion about farm worker housing. But the word is ARU right now, additional rental units, and that is more looking at neighborhoods.
Okay. And then she was wondering how the South Shore Community Plan fits into the general plan.
Do you want to take that one? And you're listening to KKCR Hanalei, KAQA Kilauea. This is Felicia and Marshall with Kauai Soapbox. Ann Walton from Community Coalition of Kauai is in here with me, and we are talking about policy, general plan update, and we're going to move beyond that, too.
Yeah, I won't speak specifically to the South Shore plan, but for community plans in general, they should complement what's in the general plan. And, of course, in the general plan is future land use. So it's recommendation on zoning and changes in zoning. And so it's going to have a huge impact potentially on the community plan. So the communities ought to take a look at that. And in here are specific community recommendations in the general plan itself. So there is a nexus between the two, and the community should be sure. Most of the the community plans are outdated.
Well, the Lihue development plan is pretty new, and the South Shore development plan is pretty new. I've gone and looked at both of them. They've done a good job. I know one issue that seems to be outstanding with the South Shore development plan is, interestingly, they just simply left off the map, Mahalapu. And looking at whether they want to have a high-density animal operation right there. And how that can be left off, to me, invalidates that whole South Shore plan, which the rest of it I thought was really pretty good. But if you put a high-density animal operation right there, the evidence is overwhelming, and we've done shows on it. I went to court. We heard the scold on the Department of Health. There's not a look for how it might hit the aquifer. What was in the environmental assessment was inaccurate in terms of the proximity to the water. In fact, all the permits got thrown out. It was very compelling how poorly designed that area was. Group 70 did that design, and did not do very close or accurate analysis, and that could impact everything from the property values to the water quality to the health of the area to the ocean. And that part of the island is between 25% and 30% of the tax base for both the county and the state out of this island. It is sort of the collateral damage for high costs. You know, the North Shore is too somewhat, but that area there is an incredible amount of the economic feeder. Do we have a caller?
We had a caller who wanted to point out, Felicia, that our roads in places, especially in Wailua, where Coco Palms is planning to open up and add more traffic to the roads, are already in poor shape. This listener says that she is zigzagging around potholes every day, and there are massive trucks flying by, and that's without Coco Palms.
And that's an excellent segue into the next section, because that's state, and that's, you know, when we're looking at alignment between these different things, you know, the average person doesn't realize when they turn right onto a road, and even we see this in Kilauea. I live in Kilauea, so I'll just own that. Coming from Kolo Road onto the highway, there's all kinds of potholes and problems, and the county says, okay, that's for the state to clean up. The state will say, oh, that's for the county to clean up. And whose road is it? And who owns that little intersection point, and whose responsibility is to make it clean? So we have those alignment issues. I want to thank our listeners for supporting Kauai Community Radio and to invite you to our birthday party.
Yay.
And we're having a birthday party. Save the date. It should be a lot of fun. We're going to hear about that when we'll be back, and we'll be talking about these other entities that align with the county.
Come help KKCR celebrate 20 years of broadcasting on Kauai. On Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park Pavilion, we're having a big pa'ina featuring live music by Michael Keale, Lady Ipo, Shiloh Pa, and Gunga La Gunga. There'll be plenty ono grinds, silent auction, a bouncy house, games, and fun for the whole ohana. The whole community is invited, and everyone's encouraged to bring a KKCR birthday cake to share. So save the date, Kauai, Saturday, August 19th at Lydgate Park. Hau'oli lahanao, KKCR. See you there.
And mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. We would love to sit there and interface with you guys. We really look forward to that. I know I will be one of the cake cutters for an hour, but it's going to be a lot of fun.
You're in the dunking booth, too, aren't you?
I'm happy to be in the dunking booth. Do we have one?
Maybe we should get one.
Maybe we should get one. So I'm going to run down a quick little list, and I'm happy to be picking your brain slightly. I know this isn't necessarily your area of expertise, but just word between me and the listener. She doesn't have to hear this. She's very smart. And she's also humble to what she doesn't know, but maybe I need to be more so. I do my best, but there are regulators. So regulating industries are things like NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, the Environmental Protection Agency, the
FDA,
the Federal
Food and Drug
Administration. There's all kinds of them. And like right now, one thing I'm just going to bounce on for a moment. We have what is perceived as a rat problem on Lehua Island, just there from Ni'ihau. Very spirited meeting. The last time I've been to a couple of meetings, they weren't spirited. We've done several shows, weren't spirited. But as people get closer to it, putting, you know, tons of poison is a $1 million operation that is being paid for by Island Conservation. We had them in here. We had the feds and the state.
It's being paid for by them, or they're
mostly
paying to do it? Or they're being paid to do it?
They are paying their own people to do it. They're funding it. It's not the state.
Uh-huh.
A little bit, but mostly it is private money. And so that is an action that's happening. And when we look at determining what's a problem, like there are many posts. I'm not going to have enough time to read down. I could do a whole nother show just on this particular piece. I've heard the good and the bad on it, you know, people about birds, and I'm kind of looking at my friend here who has been in the environmental elements of the ocean and wildlife. People get very passionate about the seals. I probably get passionate about the seals. They get passionate about the birds. This poison could hurt the seals, perhaps. It's hard to really know. Most instinct says we don't want poison, but do we want the rats to keep going?
Can I ask you a question? I know you don't want to go way, way deep
because
on this.
Because we could go deep for a very long time.
Uh-huh. Yeah, but you say most instincts. Is there science? Have they tested this? Does it hurt seals?
Well, it's an anticoagulant, so sure. If they were to eat it, yes, it would probably hurt them quite a bit. An anticoagulant is a really painful way to die. You bleed from the inside out. It is meant for mammals.
Mm-hmm.
And it would be really disastrous. And
is that something that seals would eat?
I don't think intentionally.
Right.
Maybe you know. Would seals eat the rat poison as it washes into the ocean? I mean, like maybe the fish are eating some plants that, you know, limu that has it on there, and they eat that, and then the seal eats the limu. I mean, I'm not an expert.
Yeah, I'm not an expert in this area, but, you know, the question is how much and how it's applied, and then also how much of it's actually airborne or ending up because of the topography of Lehua, how much of it's going to end up in the water itself and get absorbed into the food chain. So it's really more of a question of it's not through the water, but it would be through the food chain. And what's the dispersion time and the dissipation time of the chemical makeup of it. And that should all be in an EIS, and I believe it is. I have not read the EIS.
An environmental impact statement, yeah.
If it's not in the environmental impact statement, then the impact statement is not complete, and the project shouldn't move forward until that analysis is done.
Yes, and then I want to just mention a little bit about rat lungworm and rat mitigation. Like there's the snails and slugs and rats, and I want to be somewhat careful about how this is an emotional issue for me because we have done a number of shows on this, and we had some samples taken from an area that we work at, and so when we did our snail samples, they're like Cuban snails, and we sent them, because they were asked, to CTAR, College of Tropical Agriculture and Human Resources. We gave these slugs from an area that I'm going to be somewhat cryptic right now, but they could probably easily guess is something that Marshall and I would have involvement with. And we had to really twist some arms. It was not naturally shared back what our results were. In fact, it was avoided and delayed and, you know, kind of coercing the results. It was 100% of those three snails. So I'm told, okay, well, it's just
slugs.
Only three of them. Marshall collected them. Only three of them. But three of three all came back with the parasite in there. And this is in a place where people are actively getting foods that they eat raw. And, you know, when I pushed on this is something I pushed on pretty hard yesterday. I learned all kinds of things. Like I learned, okay, yeah, they've known solid that we've had this here on Kauai since 2004, but, you know, there was only one case last year. There was only one case the year before. It doesn't seem like they're that concerned that it's deep. They say if people want to know about it, they can look at the Kauai Emergency Management
Agency. Yeah, formerly Civil Defense.
They can look at that website. They can look at the Department of Health websites if they want to know the information. The Department of Health is certainly willing to come out and talk to people face-to-face for an organization. They can call in. I tried very hard to get them to come in. They felt that it wasn't an effective way to talk on the radio. I was deeply disappointed that there's not a procedure in place for cross-dialogue between the different departments. Like if it's the state is looking at a sampling from citizens and that that is associated with a known concern and we're repeatedly asking, I think we shouldn't even have to be repeatedly asking to get the results. We should be called with the results. And when the results comes, even if, and I could ask you, 3 out of 3, maybe that's not a significant sample, but it definitely says that the parasite is there, right? And that's on the North Shore here. She's nodding her head. So
it's not a robust sample, but it's certainly, it is, as you say, 100%. And
so it means it's there, right?
Yeah, the question, this is not, you know, my area of expertise by any means, but I would say that I would think it would trigger, there would be some protocol in place that it would trigger a series of events to find out more information, do some additional testing, to inform people about a potential problem. And we have the example before us of what happened on Maui and how it's basically in so many ways shut down the farmers markets there, the local consumption and the exportation of agriculture. And I'm just speaking from newspaper knowledge, not firsthand knowledge at all. But I think we have an example of how poorly handled situation has already occurred here in Hawaii and would want to learn from that and put a protocol in place for a situation like that, so the other outer islands are not affected in the same way. So, I'm surprised by how you're reporting back on this and how it's been handled.
Yeah, I feel pretty sore about it actually, and I did to his credit, I called our senator from our island and talked to him, and you know he's going to help me with it.
Ron Cochi,
and I did call. Some of the people who garden right there, you know, and that person who gardens right in that place where we had a problem was about to make a salad for her kid with cucumbers, basil, lettuce, and arugula grown right on that place where there's that problem, and I have a problem not sharing that information. And I really feel like it is negligent of the state. And I got kind of a little bit of a scolding, what I perceived as a scolding, and being told, well, everybody knows that it's here on this island. Well, I'm thinking, well, not everybody, because I did not.
I didn't.
And then the listener, who's a regular listener, knows that I have been involved in looking at this topic, and we've done a number of shows. That's hurting our sound. That's hurting our sound.
You've been very involved on this
I've been very involved on this topic, and then I didn't hear about it. And then when we're calling and we're pushing, we need to be hearing about it. And so for people who are listening, we have rat lungworm on this island, and I was just kind of almost patronizingly told, well, wash, you know, and cook or freeze your food that you grow. That like washing, you can't wash off the slime that has that, so washing is not enough. You need to either take the skin off or cook it or freeze it. And it seemed like that was something that was being told, like that's a very simple statement, but I bet most people don't cook or freeze their lettuce, right?
Right.
I mean, it's a guess, but I think it's probably a good guess, and I think it's probably also a good guess is that most people do not know that we have the parasite for rat lungworm on this island, and it has been a known vector here since 2004. So I am going to push on that a little bit. I think that we can take preemptive action, but we were talking about rats, and
if I could just bring this back to the context of the general plan, not that I'm trying to be myopic, but because we've been discussing that, the two economic drivers on this island that have been pulled out in the general plan and emphasized are, of course, the visitor industry, the tourism industry, and agriculture. And if this is the future of agriculture on Kauai, when we have the potential of a deadly pest on Kauai, we better think twice about what that's going to do as in terms of the economy here. And that's something that, you know, is it's really emphasized in the plan, in the general plan, in terms of an area of growth.
And in the visitor piece, I feel like the reason that this is not being said and shared and spread, and, you know, it is not an overt thing where there are signs in the airport, is because we don't want to impact our visitor industry. But I think that that's not being a good host.
Yeah, exactly.
So I could do that more on another show. I'm looking at the time coming up. Jazz with John will be here at the top of the hour. We're going to hear a little bit about our board of directors elections, and we'll hear the county council report before the end of this. But throwing out a handful of pieces that need to get explored more deeply, I'm just putting it out there, and I'm still looking at my beautiful friend here who I know knows something about protocol. The Department of Land and Natural Resources has put out new rules, and it is a time for people to be looking at it. Don't presume that somebody else is going to be looking at it for you. I know one thing that was kind of unnerving for me, they have this stuff of like where you can't take a picture of the state, and it also happens you can't take a picture of the county without having a permit, and they're overloaded in those things, so it might take 6 to 9 weeks to get a permit. So I asked, is Facebook or Hoike or whatever, is that kind of, you know, they said, yeah, you know, that's public, you're supposed to have a permit. And so we're going to work on that, but does that mean you can't take a picture with the mountain in the background? Does that mean you can't take a picture with the ocean in the background? I got a nice little note from them that said, okay, go ahead and film the Alzheimer's event this weekend. We have an Alzheimer's event at Kapa'a Ballpark, and they said, all right, you know, you don't have to have a permit to do that, you know, to put it on Hoike. But almost everything I filmed to put on Hoike is going to have the state or the county in the imagery, and that does not seem like a rule that makes sense to be in there. And
what is the rationale? Do you know?
The rationale, yeah, there's some good rationale. People will commercialize the beaches. Say they're doing photo shoots down there, and it's graduation pictures or a family reunion or whatever else, and you have a paid photographer, and they're down there, and they're spending a lot of time taking pictures. Maybe there's a whole bunch of weddings that are happening on there, and it ruins the enjoyment for other people who actually just want to go to the beach or maybe fish or whatever. There's that. There is certainly a lot of rules regarding drones, because it's an invasion of privacy. There is rules that, like, as people are taking their drones into different areas, maybe there would be pushback on the state. And then I know that there has been some sense that, like, when beautiful pictures are taken and people make a lot of money as artists, is there some money that kind of can come back to the state, just like when there's a film industry. You know, if the film industry doesn't put anything into the community, is that of value? So that's a piece. I saw that they really made it much easier to simply kill a stray animal that is on property. So cats, dogs, whatever, they can kill it without making any effort to contact the owners. I think about how that impacts hunting. There is new rules that are up for environmental impact statements. That is, there's always a chess move going on, so I think somebody needs to go over that with a fine-tooth comb. In fact, a team of people need to go through that with a fine-tooth comb, because the environmental impact statement has been the stopping block for a lot of exploitative profit-making events. And not that all profit is bad, but it is... Usually there's a serious take that's involved, and if these rules are relaxed, there is high impact for that. The National Fish and Wildlife Service, they are going to have two meetings next week, Monday on the 7th from 5 to 7 p.m. at the Princeville Community Center. It's about the Hanalei Lookout, wanting to move it from where it is right now, kind of near Foodland, up around the corner into Princeville, doing a little bit of a locked parking lot. That is 7th, 5 to 7, Princeville Community Center, Tuesday the 8th, 4 to 7 at Hale Halawai. There is a Kue Va'a coming August 18th and 19th. That is the people who are the descendants of those who signed the Kue petition, which is the Hawaiians who said, no, we do not want annexation. No, we do not want to be a republic, that really stood up. That is coming on a sailing canoe, and it will be an educational outreach and an empowerment. I'm just hitting a few very quick points of that elephant in the room. I was kind of expecting a call, didn't come in, about Hawaiian empowerment and awakening. The Mauna Kea 30-meter telescope process, that came out, it's just kind of like what you said in the general plan. Here it was a very expensive intervener contested case hearing. Months. I watched so much of it. I think I spent a couple $1 million of taxpayer money. And for the outcome that came out of it is as if nothing was said. And, you know, bottom line is, hey, it's a great piece of real estate for looking at the stars. You know, they can coexist. And not even with a really good plan for that. So that was deeply disappointing, but that is not over. And so it is kind of creating a re-empowerment. We had something like a Standing Rock type of thing going on up in the Mauna Kea movement. You know, there's a few more processes to go on before that, but that is going to come. We have had this last weekend something called La Hoi Hoi Ea, which is like the, when I interpret that, it means like the day of restoring life and sovereignty, or it's the politics of restoration and Hawaiian sovereignty. Huge discussions on that on the different islands. July 31st of 1843 was the day that the Hawaiian flag went up again. It had been down for 6 months, not only down, been taken, been burned. The British at that time, it wasn't the Americans, thank God, but the British had come in, they seized three of the ships of the Hawaiian Navy. That particular king, who was Kamehameha III, he was the first world leader to circumnavigate the world, setting up embassies around the world. The British came in, took the ships, and took the flags down, and were trying to take it, and it's kind of a little bit of a long story, but a huge story. And the challenges that faced the Hawaiians back then, or the nation of Hawaii, it's really not an ethnicity as much as it is a nation, that was continuing. I went to the KIUC annual meeting, and there was a lot of discussion. I probably need to do it on another week because a lot of good things, a few concerns. I'm learning about what it is to have a hardened system in the case of an electromagnetic pulse. That wasn't, I mean, apparently it's a big deal. I don't really understand it very well, but that has not, doesn't seem like it's been considered. And then, you know, there's the sharing water. There's other things. Marshall, did you have a couple things before we basically do an over and out?
Sure. Out of the box is on Jimmy Trujillo stopped by and said that they are going to be discussing the issue of the Lihua poison drop on Thursday at this time, 4 to 6.
Okay, and they did last week, too. They've been given that a good feature, yeah.
Yeah, and then I just wanted to let you know that there is a community emergency response team training, a CERT training coming up for Waimea, beginning on Thursday, actually, on the 3rd. And for that, you can get in touch with KFDCERT at kauai.gov or call 645-0661.
KFD, like Kauai Fire Department. I'm going to
exactly
play a little piece about our board of directors election, then we will say aloha, we'll have the county council report, and then it's jazz with John.
Elections for Kekahu Foundation board members are held if at least 15% of KKCR's Kauai members request the election and if there are more candidates than the number of open seats on the board. Otherwise, the board selects new members from qualified applicants. If you are a KKCR member who resides on Kauai and would like to request that the board conduct an election this year, please go to kkcr.org/elections and fill out the form requesting that an election be held. Or send a letter to KKCR Elections, P.O. Box 825, Hanalei, Hawaii, 96714. All requests must be received by August 31st. Please call 808-826-7774 for more information. KKCR's Board of Directors thanks all of our members for their support and their input.
So, mahalo for supporting Kauai Community Radio. Ann Walton, thank you for coming in with your strong mana'o. Tell the listener one more time where they can come and hear tomorrow night.
Community Coalition Kauai at Kapa'a Library, 6:30 to 9 tomorrow night. Hope to see you there.
Yeah, and we can really learn more, and especially, you know, new faces are incredibly welcome. It's not too late to join the conversation.
Not at all.
Including the callers that we have had. Marshall, thank you always for all that you do. And, hey, your family's getting here today.
They sure are. I'm so excited.
Yeah.
We're going to have a ball. I'll be back next week and give a report.
Yes, and so I'm looking forward to that.
Thank you so much, Ann.
Thank you, Marshall.
Aloha.
Thanks, Felicia.
You're welcome. And Jazz with John will be coming up. We have a shorter county council report, but still listen in because that is an important part of your civic responsibilities and civic literacy. That's how we make a difference, is when we build relationships with our leaders and help them make right choices.